Hello and welcome to this week's Big Boat Interview. This week, I'm talking to Andrew Bush, Head of Sales of Leisure Marine for Europe, Middle East and Asia at KVH. A man, in other words, who knows a thing or two about mobile and satellite connectivity. We talk about Andrew's start in his career, some of KVH's latest innovations, and also the emergence of Starlink. So without further ado, here is my interview with Andrew Bush from KVH. So Andrew, thank you very much for joining the Boat Briefing Podcast. And I should actually say thank you to KVH as well for sponsoring the Boat Briefing Podcast. It's great to have a podcast partner of KVH's caliber. But for the benefit of our podcast audience, why don't you just tell us a bit of your job and your role at KVH?
Thank you, Stuart. My role is quite straightforward, really. My official title is Head of Sales for KVH Leisure Superyacht Group for EMEA and Asia Pacific. I work directly for the head office in the US as part of the Global Leisure Team. We're a team of specialists who look after all of the leisure markets, or the key yachting market, shall we say, and also the super yacht markets across the globe. So my day-to-day really is channel management. It's looking after our partners within each of the countries that we have partners in, and also our OEM boat builders and the super yacht builders and integrators, and just ensuring that, you know, everybody is perfectly happy with what we're providing and listening to feedback and closing orders, really.
And KVH is obviously, it's a lot more, your focus is leisure marine, but it's much more than leisure marine. It's defense. It's, it covers all, commercial maritime as well.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, there's no question about that. The company is very diverse, but it's very much focused on its core connectivity products. So we have the mobile broadband group, and that encompasses everything to do with satellite communications. So whether it's in the commercial maritime market, or whether it's also into the US or military markets, Coast Guard, those sorts of things. And then also the leisure market, which is really where KVH started back in 1985. You know, they were a small little company working out of a garage, making heading sensors for the America's Cup market. And they've developed their business since 85 all the way through to the sort of multi-million dollar company that we are today.
Have you been to Middleton, the
birthplace? I have many times. I have many times, yes.
It sounds delightful.
Actually, to be fair, Middletown itself is okay. Newport, Rhode Island, which is the closest sailing town to it. It's very nice, except obviously in the summer where it's crazy busy and crazy expensive. So, no, we tend to get invited over to the head office during the winter times when the weather is perhaps less clement. But it's always great to catch up with the guys in the US office. You know, these days it's Teams meetings every day, and that's fine and that's great. But there's nothing like a face to face conversation and go and have a coffee and those sorts of things.
I quite agree. And KVH specialists in onboard connectivity. You started in 1985. I'm used to my script now, so I say this at the start of every podcast. So I've got my lines. But for the uninitiated and perhaps people who aren't necessarily familiar with your offering, how you exactly interact with the leisure marine industry? So it's a lot more than just sticking domes on boats, isn't it?
It is. It is. But that's what people see, right? You know, when you walk around any of the marinas, whether it's in Antibes or Portales and Mallorca, wherever you walk, you see KVH domes on the back of boats or up masts or wherever they are. And that's what people see. That's what gets our brand recognition, I suppose, in that way. But, you know, it's a diverse product line in a way. We have multiple TVROs or satellite television antennas that track whilst you're in a harbour or whether you're at sea. But these days, obviously, communication and data communication on board the boats are really what people are focused on. And it's certainly quite an interesting market, you know, whether it's a day cruiser going out for just for the day, but goes far enough offshore that cellular doesn't work, then, you know, they need to have a satellite communication system on board the boat. And, you know, we have a 37 centimeter, which is unique to the world. As far as the smallest VSAT is concerned, going all the way up to the 1 meter, sort of 20 megabit connection systems for super yachts. So we have a plethora of product that we can fulfill people's markets or their needs for.
And you kind of, like you said, you cover the entire range from, almost day boats right up to the very biggest super yachts.
Yeah, we do. And we have that also for the satellite television products as well. And, you know, I first introduced, I suppose, satellite TV before I worked for KVH directly. But in a previous role, we bought the first KVH satellite TV systems into the UK market in, 1999. And it's just progress from there. The first satellite TV systems were 45 centimeters. We took them to the UK boat builders. And it was one of those sort of technologies that everybody wanted.
So 45 centimeter dishes.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Because, beforehand, the boats didn't really have anything. They had Inmarsat M systems for the big ones. And then the introduction of Inmarsat Mini-M came along. At the same time, KVH bought out the product called TracFone 50, which was a 45 centimeter or 50 centimeter satellite communication product. And alongside came the 45 centimeter TracVision 45, I think it was called back in the day. and that's where the dual dome concept came from. You know, TV on one side, communication on the other. It made the aesthetics on the boat look very nice. And we had absolutely superb success with the boat builders. As their clients demanded more and more from them and more luxuries on board the boats, we were able to provide just another level of connectivity, I suppose, which wasn't really a term back then. But, it's the watching of satellite television systems when you're in your marina with your gin and tonic or whatever you're doing, and then also being able to have communications when you went offshore.
So those 45 centimeter dishes back in 1998, what could you, obviously streaming TV then really? So
yeah, streaming TV was definitely, and you would not do that over an Inmarsat Mini-M, that's for sure not. The cost would have been somewhat prohibitive, even if you could have got close to the data speeds. But no, it was analog satellite TV back then. So, it was Sky Television or, what was free to air, depending on where the boat was. You know, satellite TV footprints were still, a challenge, getting people to understand them because they have a dish stuck on the side of their house and they expected wherever they went to be able to get the same, which, wasn't 100% true. So it took quite a lot of understanding from our perspective what you could get in certain areas, but also from the client's perspective. But, they were there watching UK television down in Palmer and just being able to enjoy just a little bit of home luxury on board their boats.
So you've really seen a wild change in data vision to super yachts and the leisure marine sector more generally.
I mean, without a doubt. I mean, I've been in this industry now since I left uni in 95, so it's 28 years. And my first job was selling little compasses and handheld monocular with built-in Fluxet compasses out into all of the electronic dealers in the UK or the chandleries and just driving around the country doing that sort of thing. And to have it evolve then to satellite television and then communications. And, the satellite TV world has not evolved that much. Yes, it's gone from analog to digital, but the process or specifics of satellite TV hasn't really changed. Obviously, there's been some different requirements, but data communication, yeah, for sure. It's gone from, having a, I can't even remember what the TracFone 50 had, but I suppose very similar to a very slow dial-up or something like that, we're both old enough to understand and remember those days to what you have these days, which is, a 20 megabit connection or, if you start talking about Starlink and things, you've got suddenly 150, 200 megabit connection, which back then would have just been absolutely crazy, unheard of.
Well, you've mentioned the S word. So let's tuck into that, shall we? I mean, As I was saying just before we started recording, so I've spent a bit of time in the US recently. I was out at the Bucket in St. Bart's as well, and almost every owner I spoke to was talking about Starlink. Could either they had the RV receiver kind of cheekily on the aft deck, picking up pretty good broadband speeds, or they'd opted for the maritime version and were paying more, obviously. But all of them were, they loved it. They just loved it. And you are on a, we're talking to each other now via Starlink as well, because you've got Starlink at home.
I do have Starlink at home, and I was one of their first beta, not first, but one of their beta testers here in the UK, primarily because I live in rural North Wales. And, you know, my internet connection otherwise would be a 2 megabit connection from Openreach or BT, whatever they're called these days. Or then a LTE service. I've got an LTE antenna on the house, and that fluctuated wildly. You know, some parts of the day you could get a really good connection. Other parts of the day, and certainly when the tourists came in, the data connections would really slow down. So Starlink for me was, it was a great opportunity to A, test the technology, but also, you know, to get a faster internet connection at home, which is, I think, what, you know, Starlink are trying to achieve, isn't it? It's to give connectivity to those people who don't have access to high-speed internet. And I, you know, looking at what they've provided for me, I've got a first-generation dish stuck in my, well, pegged down with rock pegs in my drive. And it's not the prettiest thing in the world by any stretch of the imagination. My wife hates it. But it does give us broadband connectivity to the house. So, but
and what kind of speeds are you getting up there in North Wales through Starlink?
That does vary. You know, I'm not a person who sits there and does speed tests every 5 seconds just to see. When we were doing the speed tests, in the early days, we'd certainly get 150 meg connection without batting an eyelid. But these days, I think there's obviously more and more users. The speeds do vary depending on the time of the day and those sorts of things. So on average these days, probably 60 to 100 meg would be, I guess, where I would see, you know. But if I was to do a speed test at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm sure I'd still get the 150 meg that they promised me. But, you know, it for me, you know, there's not many of us here, so we don't need super fast connectivity. It's enough that I can stream, you know, Sky TV and Netflix and those sorts of things. And also I can work from home with good connectivity.
Well, the connection is very good today. So
yeah, it is. It is, actually. And, you know, I mean, sometimes we have challenges and sometimes we don't. So,
So, I mean, again, we should probably explain. So Starlink is Elon Musk's array of thousands and thousands of low Earth orbit satellites. And because they're low Earth orbit, it means the receiver can be much smaller and flat and is much less kind of unobtrusive than traditional dishes. And it means because all the satellites are in low Earth orbit, speeds are much better. So we've done, you know, we did a big feature about Starlink and the new frontier of LEO connectivity recently. And the early adopters loved it, but they did say, like in crowded anchorages, for instance, they had noticed some strangulation. The signal did suffer a little bit because of the uptake, especially if they're next to a big, or in the same harbour as a big cruise ship or something, because the cruise ship soaks up all the bandwidth. I mean, is that something you guys are seeing as well?
You know, from our perspective, because, you know, whilst KBH has a relationship with Starlink, we're not sort of providing the airtime for Starlink. So we don't see, shall we say, the customer user experience. Yes, I mean, you know, like everybody, you follow the Facebook groups and LinkedIn groups and things like that. And yes, there is a lot of positivity about the service. Of course there is. But there is also some concerns that sort of network congestion, shall we say, when a cruise ship comes into port. But, you know, that from our perspective is perhaps why we look at a hybrid solution, really, because, you know, if you look at the TrackNet series of products that KVH produce, it's a VSAT, it's a Wi-Fi connection, it's a 5G LTE connection, and you can also then bring into your Starlink as an alternative primary source of communication. So if you have one of those sorts of services on board, if for some reason the Starlink network becomes congested, then the auto-switching within the TrackNet service or the TrackNet system will automatically swap you to the next best sort of service that is available. And that's done on various things, whether it's jitter, whether it's speed, whether it's cost, and it will just automatically switch you. So you get a seamless connection.
So you guys, I mean, obviously you can integrate Starlink. I mean, that's the offering that is quite compelling, isn't it? Because 4G, wireless, Wi-Fi, LEO, MEO, and high Earth orbit satellite provision, all of them basically can be integrated through the KVH system. So, and then you don't think about it, right? So if you're, so the system will go, well, there's a stronger signal over here, or we'll pick up the marina Wi-Fi, or there's 4G off land. It just does it. You don't think about it.
No. I mean, you know, when you set it up, you obviously put some certain parameters.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, it's because we know that VSAT data can be quite expensive. So it is more expensive than the Starlink if you do it on a per gigabyte basis. But we also know that 5G or LTE, depending on where you are, is much cheaper than the satellite communication, and then normally Wi-Fi is the cheapest of all, again depending on your levels of communication. So yes, you have this multifaceted system that has all of these connections, and when the installer is doing the setup, then they just say, okay, well, that parameter is that, and it will just auto switch between each of the different services depending on what is the best available. You know, if you look at the way that the phased array antennas with Starlink are, you know, you could definitely suffer with blockage on some yachts. You know, we do with some of the VSAT systems that we do today, and that's why we have dual dome systems, those sorts of things. So, you know, yes, you could have a dual dome Starlink and be able to do the same thing. But some people don't necessarily think about it in the same way, because they're looking at it and it's, you know, $2,500 for the Starlink antenna, and then they just want to sort of pay the minimum, shall we say.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The I mean, it's interesting from a designer's point of view as well, because some designers, or actually some even owners, you see some big Fed ships like the 110 meter Anna come out of the shed, and huge domes, clearly a fan of domes, that owner loves all the various arrays up top, but some owners are very anti the dome. They create a bit of windage on sailing yachts as well. So, you know, the lower profile antennas that Starlink or the other low Earth orbit providers like OneWeb are offering are clearly appealing to a certain class of owner and designer, because they want to design the sleekest possible boat, don't they?
Yeah, of course. And I understand that. I mean, it's, but for us, domes have been part of our lives since the early 90s. You know, it's, how boats are designed these days. And yes, there has been times where phased array antennas have become, you know, sort of, okay, this is the new hot thing, and that's great, but they haven't necessarily caught on. Now, there could be various different reasons for that. You know, having a stabilized antenna pointing at a satellite will always give you a clear connection. You know, with a phased array, it's different than a low Earth orbit satellite, because the low Earth orbit satellites are traveling across the sky. Now, if you're directly above the phased array antenna, then you'll have a full power system. But, you know, boats move. They pitch and roll on the ocean, especially if they're offshore. And, you know, if you're, the satellite is lower in the sky, on the horizon, shall we say, then you'll get less power throughput on the satellite or from the phased array antenna than you would do if it was directly above it. And I think that's you know, why, again, if you're on a very mobile platform, perhaps it would be good to look at having a VSAT, certainly as a backup for that. Because, you know, if you're not getting a good enough connection where you've got blockage because you've got the mast in the way or sails in the way, those sorts of things, then you can all go back to your alternative primary, which is your VSAT communication.
And VSAT's fairly fail-safe, isn't it? I mean,
it's a proven technology, right? You know, I mean, we launched our first VSAT service in 2007. So, you know, we had that. Yeah, okay, it was only a 2 meg connection, but it was still a 2 meg connection, and that was from a yachting perspective. That was reasonable back then, and of course, yeah, technology evolves, satellites evolve, and now we get a 20 meg connection. And you know, yes, you can go faster, and you know, but it comes down to how much you're willing to pay for your airtime. Now with Starlink, it's different. You know, the prices are very competitive in the market. So it's definitely a game changer for all of the satellite industry to have these LEO services come through, whether it's, you know, Starlink now or OneWeb next year or Kuiper or, you know, all of the others that, I mean, there's going to be so many satellites up there. It's going to be incredible. You know, it's...
the numbers we're talking about are wild, right? I mean, it's, you think... It's going to be a car park up there of all these little washing machines.
How are you going to get any rockets to go actually further out or not? I don't know. You know, because it's just your timing's got to be absolutely spot on. But yeah, it's just one of those things, isn't it? It's sort of it's great from an industry perspective to have these new technologies come through. But you know, VSAT is a tried and tested form of communication. And I think any yachtsman who's been out to sea would always understand the need for having a backup communication product. There's no question about that.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Like you said earlier, in data provision, and it's such a non-negotiable nowadays. And but also, I can't help but feel a bit, you know, there's parts of the world where you shouldn't be able to stream Netflix, you know?
Yeah. What are you boating for? That's the question, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's, and we do, and genuinely we do have customers who, you know, they don't want high-speed data. They don't need high-speed data. What they want is they want to download weather files. They want to send some basic emails, maybe FaceTime the kids or something like that. And that's fine. So that, you know, they don't need to spend $1,000 a month on a Starlink system. They don't want to put this huge, great sort of phased array antenna on there. They're happy with a 37 centimeter little dome stuck on the pole on a transom or up on the radar arch on the flybridge. And that's what they're happy with. And we have, and you know, we still see a huge demand for that product, even though the Starlink is out there and that's what everyone's asking for. You know, the smaller antennas are really still flying out the door, which is fantastic to see.
Yeah.
And you know, we have our entry level, which is the V30. But by the time if you upgrade that to the H30, the TrackNet H30, then that's when you can start to integrate your Starlink if you needed to, and have the auto switching and things.
And you're a kind of conception to delivery kind of business, aren't you? Because you manufacture the arrays as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're an end-to-end solution provider. So it's a one-stop shop when you buy with KVH. We manufacture our own hardware in Rhode Island, just up the road from the HQ building. We have a very high-tech manufacturing facility and everything's manufactured there. We obviously run our own and operate our own network, utilizing Intelsat as the satellite provider. But everything from, you know, the purchase of the product, the purchase of the airtime services through to, you know, sort of support of our customers is done solely by KVH.
And do you work with resellers or is it all direct?
No. In the leisure world, we only work through resellers. So the way we work is we have distributors in each country. Primarily, you know, these companies have been with us for 10 plus years as a minimum, normally. And they are well versed in A, their own markets. So, you know, in France, for instance, we have Navicom, and they look after the French markets for us. So they act very much like KVH in that country. They run their own sales channels, and then they have their own dealer network, and they do their own training to ensure that everybody's up to standard, you know, with support from KVH. But we have a philosophy now where we're training their staff to the highest level, and then they go out to then train their downstream partners. And that works very well because, you know, the nice thing about when you're buying a KVH product is, you know, you can go into most marinas and there'll be a dealer who is trained to be able to support you if you require that. And that's certainly the challenge that, you know, some boaters will find with the likes of a Starlink system, because you know, their business model is very different. It's very direct from Starlink to the consumer. And the support line, I believe, is, well, from my own knowledge, is it's just through an app on your phone. You can raise a ticket and then you can try and get support. Whereas, you know, a lot of boaters, they actually want more than that. You know, they want to be able to speak to someone, have someone come to the boat and be able to look at the products and the services. And for us, we have a 24/7 support operations center based in the US. And, you know, the guys can look at the terminal online, they can go through everything and they could talk to the owner, the captain, or the representative on board the boat and talk them through what needs to be done. And if need be, they can always send someone to the boat. So, you know, there's different models depending on, I suppose, the level of support that you're looking for.
Well, it's why people love putting Volvos in their boats because, you know, the support network is truly global and, you know, you can find people anywhere that can fix the engine. And I suppose it's like the same. After sales is so crucial in our business because owners and captains, especially on charter boats, nothing, you know, they have to be unimpeded, these programs. So if you're waiting around for a call, or if you've got someone immediately on the phone telling you what's wrong or how to fix it, that's so, so important.
Yes, but also the fact that we have over 3,500, you know, technical dealers around the world. So, you know, we're very strong on ensuring that, you know, those dealers can do a first time fix, you know. Okay, it doesn't always happen, but, you know, we strive for a very high percentage of first-time fix when someone has to go on the boat. And, you know, spares availability in key yachting areas and things like that, it's essential to make sure that, you know, you can deliver what the customer's expecting. As you say, you know, if you've got a charter guest or charter boat, it doesn't have time to wait around for, you know, 3 or 4 days to get the parts to you. And it's the same in the commercial maritime market as well, you know. We have a lot of thousands of terminals out there, and a commercial ship will do the same thing. It will come into port, expects to be able to have that system repaired there and then, and not wait for, you know, for the next port or the next port or the next port. You know, they have to have that reliable, solid communications. And I think that's why KVH has been very successful in the leisure market, but also the commercial maritime market, is because the level of support that we have, you know, the field service teams, the network support people, they're all extremely diligent at what they do. And then just makes the sales guys look good.
So are you seeing the same kind of thing across the commercial shipping and defense sectors as well? The kind of the multifaceted hybrid approach to comms and data. You can't ever rely on a single service and people like spreading their bets, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, I don't tend to get involved that much in the commercial maritime market, but from my understanding is, yes, there's still a requirement to have a basic level of backup communication, whether that's an Iridium, Certus, or something along those lines. And then there would be the VSAT. Now, looking at the next level, then probably it will be the LEO, and then with the VSAT as the backup, those sorts of things. So it depends where the vessel's doing and where the vessel is going and where it's operating, really.
So what I mean, 10 years down the line, or in 15 years down the line, I mean, what do you see as the future of onboard comms, data, streaming, the works?
Well, that's a good question, isn't it? Because did 10, 15 years ago, well, no, did 10, 15 years ago, did we imagine that we could be getting 150 megabit connection at $1,000 a month? It's absolutely unheard of. So, you know, I think as far as the future is concerned, everything will still, it will continue to evolve. But, you know, the likes of the LEO networks and things, again, with Starlink, only talking about Starlink because it's the one with the operational service at the moment. But, you know, I believe from my understanding is that, you know, that needs to have 40 million users on that network to make it viable. Now, that's a lot of people. And that's not the maritime market, right? That's people like me living in the countryside wanting faster internet connection, and that's people living more off-grid and, you know, and just in places of the world where there is not the infrastructure. So I think in that respect, the networks themselves are going to evolve as well, because 40 million people versus, I don't know, whatever Starlink has today, 1.5-2 million users, something like that. You know, that's a huge amount of throughput additional onto that satellite network. So will the speeds still be as they are in another 5-10 years? But also, the satellites themselves only, I think, last between 5 and 6 years. So there has to be a constant refresh of these satellites going up. You know, and I don't know what the environmental impact of that is either. You know, that's a lot of rockets to put these satellites up. But you know, I'm sure that everything will just evolve, and we will get faster, we'll get smaller dishes, and the price per gigabyte will be perhaps more like cellular than satellite in the end. You know, and what happens if, you know, these little iPhones and things that we have, if they can then start doing cellular to satellite services, then that's another game changer, right? So, you know, I think evolution is always, it's inevitable. And it's good for the industries to keep on top of that, as long as you're at the forefront of it.
And you're interacting with customers all the time. So what are they telling you about their basic kind of data needs? I mean, are they...
People want, you know, they see the high level things. I want 350 meg. Why? Why do you need 350 meg?
No one needs 350 meg.
No one needs 350 meg. You know, I want unlimited data. Well, how much data do you actually really use? Probably, you know, maybe a terabyte if you're lucky. You know, it's, but of course, once you get into the, you know, the true super yacht, mega yacht market, then of course, you know, they have to be able to provide that level, because it looks good. But for the average boater who goes out a couple of weeks a year or a couple of weeks, you know, here, there and everywhere, he's not using that sort of level of data. Because actually, to be fair, he's enjoying his boat and he's out sailing and he's out motoring and cruising around. And yes, he's sending some emails, doing some FaceTime and stuff like that. But, you know, and maybe streaming some Netflix or Amazon Prime, whatever he wishes to do so. But, you know, in the end, they're not tending to use that serious amounts of data. And if there's only three or four people streaming on that, you don't need 350 meg. You can get away with it. You know, a 10 meg service, you know, you could stream Netflix through a 10 meg service in high definition. And that's just our straightforward standard 60 centimeter VSAT.
Yeah. And with the KVH system, are you able to just, is there a pay-as-you-go option, or just, you know, pay as, so if you are on the boat a couple of weeks a year?
Yeah, I mean, the month-to-month contracts. So in that respect, you know, what we'd suggest if you're going sailing for the months of July and August or something like that, then, you know, you switch it on, you pay for 2 months and you switch it off again. And that's it. Or, you know, if you're, shall we say, going in May and then going again in July, what you can do is, rather than terminate it, you can just leave it on a voice-only suspension plan, which basically means that the terminal is still active on our network, so it's receiving any network updates and things like that. And then you're not having the hassle of reactivating every single time. You're just dropping it down to the lowest basic plan, paying a nominal fee per month, and then, you know, just a simple email, you get it reactivated and away you go again. So it's very straightforward. You know, gone are the days of, you know, being tied into things for 2 years or 5 years, and, you know, you're having to pay every month when you're not using the boat, those sorts of things. No, everything is, we try to make it as flexible and as easy for customers as we can.
And I'm guessing, given, I mean, the sport, the leisure marine market over the last couple of years, I mean, you've seen the numbers, presumably, the market's been on fire. So that, I'm guessing that flows through into your business as well, because more boats equals more need for satcoms and data and domes. And so I'm guessing KVH is a very, very, very busy company.
We are certainly very busy. There's no question about that. Yeah, for us, you know, COVID was, okay, it was a challenge from a personal perspective, because I wasn't allowed to travel. You know, I travel a lot. I'm off to Asia tomorrow. And, you know, I go to all of these different boat shows around the world. Again, see our global OEM customers. And that was a challenge. But from a sales perspective, from a boating perspective, it was great. Once people could use their boats again, they didn't want to be in hotels with thousands of other people. They just wanted to be isolated on their boats. And that meant that they wanted to work from it. And they needed faster, better data communications on board the boat. And yes, from that perspective, COVID was a good thing. You know, it helped sales. And that hasn't changed. I think, you know, it helped the yachting industry a lot in a certain way. And it got a lot of new people into yachting. And that's great.
New entrants have been, it's one of the biggest markers of this little mini boom we've been experiencing over the last couple of years is the amount of new entrants that have been coming into the market.
And that's great. You know, I've been to Southampton Boat Show over the year. Well, I was 28 Southampton Boat Shows.
28. That beats my record.
Oh, that's quite depressing. Anyway, no, you see the same faces and the same faces and the same faces when you're working on a booth down on any of the boat shows. Yet now you got new faces coming, and that's great because that's what the industry needs. It needs new consumers to come into it and then, you know, keep that whole business going again. And, you know, there's a lot of new wealth out there. You know, people still make a lot of money, and buying boats is a great way for them to spend their money.
Hmm. I quite agree. We need more of it.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, that would be fantastic. And if they would like even more satellite communication products on their boats, happy to assist.
Go see KVH.
Yes.
What's the Asia trip about? Is that see some customers or some dealers?
It's going to see some boat builders. I'm heading out to Taiwan. We have quite a lot of boat builders out there. So I'm going to spend next week just trawling around Kaohsiung and going meeting our customer base out there, making sure that they're happy. And, you know, they're all selling, well, they're all building boats, all selling boats, and ensuring that KVH is still the number one product for them.
Well, those boat yards are humming. They're doing so, so well.
Yes. Yeah, they've added to their capacity, and they're just building and building and building, and you know that's fantastic. You know, it's the same with all of our boat builders, really. You know, whether here in the UK or in Italy or in Australia or out in the Middle East, it's everybody is still churning out boats, and that's great because yeah, KVH is. Shall we say on the production boats, at least up to 45 meters, you know, the number one choice for TV and for satellite communication products. So it keeps us on our toes. We're certainly quite busy.
And how about you personally? Do you you sail up there in North Wales?
I used to sail a lot when growing up. I used to have a dinghy. Started my sailing career, if you want to call it that, at French and Ponds, of all places.
Oh, I know French and Ponds. Yeah, it's famous.
Yeah, my brother and I, we had a cadet, a little sort of smaller version of the mirror dinghy down there, and then progressed up to Laser, and then a Laser 5000, which was just incredibly difficult to sail. So that didn't last long. And then into catamarans for the Dart. The Dart 18s, which was a lot of fun, but not in French and Ponds, it's far too small. And we used to sail out of Pagham and Hailing Island, and that was all good fun. And then, yeah, I suppose, in a way, working in the marine industry, I kind of moved away from it a little bit. It was because that, you know, working on boats and working with boats was your day job. You didn't then really do that for fun either. So, and then middle age came and too many glasses of wine and too many nice meals out. And sailing is probably, I'd be good for ballast. That's about it, I think, at the moment.
That's all I'm good for nowadays as well.
But it's still there. I like watching the America's Cup. I still have a passion for yachting and boating in general. I enjoy working in the industry. It's a fun industry. People are always so nice. It's quite niche, you know, it's quite a small industry. You know, you see people with different business cards every year, and but they're still, yeah, the same people, just with a different title, different job. So yeah, I enjoy it.
Fantastic. Well, you know, keep enjoying it. I hope you enjoy your travels out to Asia. Say hello to our friends from Horizon, Ocean Alexander, and all the others for us. And,
yes, absolutely, of course. Yeah, and then I'll be down in Palma the week after for the International Boat Show and Superyacht Show down there. So.
Sadly, I won't make that one, but there'll be some Boat International team members wandering about.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll be down there in the sunshine, hopefully, and seeing what the Starlink buzz is versus satellite communication buzz. So we'll see how that goes. But
Let me know. Let me know.
It should be fun times anyway. Absolutely. So it's Palma's always a nice show to go to. It's kind of like Palm Beach in that way. It's quite a relaxed show.
Quite agree. Well, Andrew, I really appreciate you taking the time and
no problem, Stuart,
talking with me today. And thanks for tuning in, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat interview. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and don't forget also to tune into our regular installment of Boat Briefing. This episode was mixed and produced by Adam Geest and Naomi Wilson and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.